Welcome to Dark Mode, the podcast that brings you sage advice from not one but two technology experts. And that's not just what we call ourselves, it's what our moms tell people when their friends still have a home button. I'm your host, Luke Miani.
And I'm your host, Noah Rubin. On this show, we take questions from listeners, attempt to answer them to varying degrees of success, and maybe even have a laugh or two along the way.
And in fact, this week we might have an iPhone or two along the way, as well as, for the first time that I can remember, we've got a random Apple announcement in February. Not typically, well, actually that's a bad example because 1 year ago they did release Vision Pro in February, but that doesn't really count because it was not announced then. I think they just, they picked a date on a calendar and said, all right, let's do that.
Yeah, and surely this announcement on Wednesday will be just as big of a deal as the Vision Pro was last year, surely.
You know what's ironic is it probably will be a bigger deal.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was making a joke that it's like, you know, a bigger deal, but like, do people talk about the Vision Pro anymore? It kind of just vanished, you know?
Vision Pro is pretty much over, I'm afraid. Here's the thing. I have not used my Vision Pro in so long. It's embarrassing how long it's been. In fact, when my parents are staying with me right now, when they leave, I gotta pull it out. It's been sitting there for so long. I feel bad, frankly. And, you know, I mean, I've barely even used it since Vision OS 2 came out. Like, the thing is just, I think the biggest problem with it is that it doesn't fit into a daily routine. If you're someone who doesn't have an iPad and you get an iPad, very quickly you kind of figure out what you want to do with it. A lot of people don't have iPads, which is why I picked that example. But if you do get it, then all of a sudden you go, "Huh, wait a minute. Maybe instead of reading news on my phone, I can read it on an iPad where I can still hold it like a tablet, but use it like a phone." Or maybe you say it's easier to bring it on a plane. And crucially, you don't have to put it in your bag like you do with a laptop on most airplanes for takeoff and landing. So very quickly, you kind of see how that can fit into your life. But Vision Pro is just, it's a hassle in all situations. You have to, oh man, let me pull it out and put it on. And if you're able to get in that zone, as apparently, oh hi Mark, in our YouTube chat here is able to do, and is currently watching on Apple Vision Pro, I assume with the room in another window, I guess it works.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to say it, but I'm really glad that I returned mine. And I know I caught a little bit of flack from, I'm not going to name any names, but I got some flack when I returned
it. It was me. I'm the flack giver. And okay. You know what? I still maintain that flack. You got to be ride or die, all right? If this is going to be the future, don't you want to be able to say that you were there when it sucked?
Can I say that I was there? I did own it for a week and a half.
Doesn't count. That was a trial. That was a test drive.
Okay, but you said that your Vision Pro has been sitting in the corner for God knows how long. So is that really that much different when you think about it?
Yeah, it is. You went on two dates. I'm in a not committed long distance relationship.
I see the difference. And you prefer that sort of situationship, as it were, to just you know, calling it as it is and breaking it off, you know, before it goes on too long.
Look, I'm nostalgic. It's, you know, some people just, they don't want to go through a divorce. They don't want to go through a breakup. And that's what I'm doing. I'm holding on in some hope that one day a spark will return and I'll feel drawn to it again. But until then, we're just sort of living our separate lives. We're cohabitating.
And you know what? I did the same thing with the Apple Watch. I don't want to rehash all these old, you know, I know we've talked about this before, but I'll just say very briefly that I had the original Apple Watch when it came out and I returned that too. And it wasn't, I didn't say, oh, I hate this thing, I'm never going to have an Apple Watch, you know, whatever. But it was just a little too soon. I returned it and I got back in on the Series 5. And now I'm addicted to my Apple Watch. So I hope that that happens with the Vision Pro 2. Give it a couple generations. It'll be a hopefully lot more usable. Hopefully not five. At the rate that they're going, hopefully not five. I'll tell you that much. But
it'll be like 2050.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, hopefully give it a few generations. It gets a lot quicker, easier to use, lighter, whatever. Just easier to use. And then I will happily get back on the Vision Pro bandwagon if and when Apple does that.
I'll tell you what is definitely smart and easy to use and an improvement over what they currently have, and that is the new iPhone SE. That's right. I think we gotta just start with this, because that's the big story here is we are staring down the barrel of, I guess we're calling these Apple launches now. I don't really know what to call this new thing that we're doing now. I do have some thoughts about this style of product announcement, but we'll spare that for now to discuss that Tim Cook, in a rare occurrence, has actually confirmed, hey guys, Wednesday something's coming out. And, you know, 2 + 2 = 4. We're pretty sure it's an iPhone SE.
Yeah, I think in this case, if it's a sort of a one, I don't think they're going to do a bunch of stuff. I think it's probably just going to be the one iPhone. And it's not a flagship product. It's the entry-level iPhone. It's an important product for Apple, like, don't get me wrong. And it's we'll be very interested to see what it is. But I think it is the kind of thing that Apple can, I guess, sometimes when they do these things, they really just like drop a press release and there's maybe not a lot of like preview to that. But it is, I think, one of those products where they can kind of just drop it, maybe a little bit of fanfare, but, you know, kind of just release it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the previous iPhone SE got event time, which was kind of surprising. It was 3 years ago, right? So it not exactly recent, but the iPhone SE before that, which was actually a bigger deal because that was when the iPhone SE, the second generation iPhone SE that came out in 2020, which got the iPhone 8 design, which, as ironic as it is to think about now, was actually like a major upgrade at the time. Now, not so much. I actually just did a video not too long ago with the iPhone SE third generation as a component of the cheapest Apple ecosystem. And it is remarkable that you can get the current iPhone SE as of right now that you can still go to an Apple store and buy for, I paid $120 for what is effectively an iPhone 13. That's pretty nuts. You know, I mean, it's a good value, but it is pretty clear to me that the time has come, because I used that phone for a week and it had a brand new battery. So, you know, it was as if you went in and bought a brand new iPhone SE and that's what I was using. And dude, the battery is not it. I mean, it's a 2022 smartphone, or I guess, yeah, or a 2021 smartphone, whatever smartphone. Yeah, 2021 smartphone in a 2017 smartphone. And that battery, it's an 8-year-old, like, that was a chassis. Honestly, you could even draw it back further than that, because the iPhone 8 is a modified iPhone 7, which is a modified iPhone 6. So this is a 10-plus-year-old sized battery running 2025 smartphone stuff. It is not the move. So the fact that we're finally going into the modern era, by which I mean the era that began in 2017, well, it can't come soon enough.
No, I definitely agree. I mean, if you look at the current iPhone SE, it really is showing its age at this point. It's a functional design, but like you said, it's the iPhone 6 design. If you put the latest iPhone SE next to an iPhone 6 or 6 Plus or whatever, there's not going to be that much of a difference. Like, obviously,
you can't even see it from the front.
Yeah, exactly. Like the physical. I think the speaker, like when you hold your phone up, the little speaker on the top is longer or something. I think that's like the only difference. It's like, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's
that's a big difference.
Yes. Wow. So, but yeah, like you said, it's such an old design. And it's funny because when we talk about the Pro iPhones, especially when we're talking about the 16 Pro this year, or not even the Pro, but just like the non-SE, but we'll say especially the Pro. We talk about the 16 Pro and we're saying that design is already, I don't know if it's starting to get old or not, but like that design has largely been around since the iPhone 10. You could say a little more, you know, the iPhone 11 kind of introduced the current camera layout, and then we got the flat sides after that and whatever. But the current design has been around for a while. And then you look at the SE, which is based on a design that's even older than that. So at this point, it's like 2025, like, why, like, we still have a home button with Touch ID, we still have the big chin and the big forehead and all that. It is definitely time, and I get it, it's Apple's cheapest phone, it's their least expensive phone, they want to keep it, you know, base model, base level, they want to give people a reason to get the more expensive ones, the people that are considering it, they want them to ladder up, but it's such an old design at this point that, like, they have to just move on. And I think that's what they're going to do.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. And there's nothing they can do to salvage that design. Its time has come and gone. And what I think is really interesting about this new iPhone SE, I mean, the two biggest things that I care about are the camera setup and the, like, I guess, screen setup, as well as the price point. Because obviously we know that we're leaping several generations design-wise. But does that mean that we fall more on the iPhone 12 side of it, or maybe the iPhone 14, or maybe the iPhone 16? Because those are, like, obviously very similar, but there are the subtle differences. Is the back glass going to be glossy or frosted? I think from what we've heard, it seems like it's going to be glossy, so not the iPhone 16. Which means the corners probably won't be as rounded as the iPhone 16. And I think it's pretty much confirmed at this point that it's going to be a single camera. So the question is that going to be a 48 megapixel camera where you get that 2x cropped zoom? Or do they pull, I guess it would be the main camera from the iPhone 14? Because I think the 15 is when they moved over that the 48 megapixel to the regular. So, like, it looks like it's going to be a hybrid device. And for that reason, it's actually going to be a unique design. The single camera that we've heard about, the combination of probably having a notch, probably not a dynamic island, but still USB-C, but a single camera. I honestly think this has a lot of potential to be a genuinely really, really well-rounded and well-featured phone. The question then becomes, how much does it cost?
Yeah, that's definitely an important question for the SE, which is supposed to be the budget-level entry phone. Before we go there, I'll just respond to the other stuff you were saying. I definitely agree. It's gonna be a little bit of a unique phone. I think there's definitely a few areas where Apple can differentiate it from, you know, the iPhone 16 series. For example, the single camera, right? You can kind of, you ladder up. You got the one camera, two camera, three camera system. So that's a good way.
Right.
You also have...
That's a good way to think of it. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like if you want more cameras, you want better camera performance, more options, whatever, you know, that's one way to get you to ladder up. You can also look at... I do think that it will use maybe some of the older design elements. So maybe it's not a dynamic island. It could be a dynamic island for all we know, but maybe it's not. If it's a notch kind of shape, that could be another differentiating factor. Other things like the material, obviously it's not going to have like the camera control that all the 16s have. So there will definitely be some differences between them, but you are right that it will kind of be, it's not going to just be like, you know, the SE3 where they took an iPhone 8 chassis and stuck newer hardware in there. They're going to be reusing existing, you know, ideas, existing hardware to some extent, but it is going to be a new product, at least, you know, the way that they assemble everything together, it is going to be new in that way. So I agree with you that there's some potential for them to make something if they can really separate it, because they can separate it from the 16 series on features, but I wonder if they can also separate it in terms of the look and kind of just like really have a good like marketing for like who is this for, like why does this exist, like that whole thing.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. I like that thought of 1, 2, and 3 cameras, because that really is like a very recognizable way to identify the lineup. I think actually Mercedes did that. I don't know if they still do, but up until, I don't know if the current generation is different, the Mercedes C, E, and S class had 1 DRL bar on the C class, 2 on the E class, 3 on the S class. What is that? Was kind of like a little subtle nod. Oh, a daytime running light. So like, you know, those little LED accent lights that are always on cars.
Yeah.
So it basically had like, I can pull up a picture of this. 2019 Mercedes S class. That was where I don't know if they're still doing it, but they have these like, it's like a very Mercedes thing to do. They have like this little bar. You see these three lines here that illuminate?
Yeah.
And if we look up the E-Class, you can see that it had 2 of those in different locations, but you see 1, 2.
Okay.
And then the C-Class only had 1. So that, like, I don't know. I've always kind of liked that little, it's not an overt detail, but it makes sense. And I like that to have some little, did I say DLR or did you say DLR? People in the chat are freaking out. I don't know. Whatever. I don't know. Daytime running lights is what it stands for. And that's kind of a similar vibe for this new iPhone, which I actually think could look really good. You know what? Sorry, I'm getting all out of sorts here. I forgot to mention, it might not actually be called the iPhone SE. Have you heard this?
I was just taking a look. I heard, what was it, 16E? Is that the rumor?
Yeah. Which is weird, because I don't know how I feel about that. On the one hand, I think the iPhone SE has always been it's not an annual product, right? We've never had less than 2 or 3 years between iPhone SEs. The first one came out in like 2016, I think it was, and then 2020, and then 2022. I guess that was a 2-year gap. That was pretty small for them, but now it's been 3 years. So when you brand it iPhone 16E, to me that kind of indicates, hey, this might get updated more often, which would be a little bit weird to me. Because I think if they were to do that, a lot of people would just straight up ignore the iPhone 16. They'd because once the SE joins that nomenclature, I think what it indicates is there's current iPhone Pro and iPhone minus, kind of. And a lot of people are just going to say, well, I just buy whatever the cheapest one is. So if it's a 16, I don't care what the suffix is, it's the lowest price and it's the current number, I'm just going to buy that. Because people genuinely do not have any clue what iPhone that they're buying. You know, if you have an iPhone, you say, I would like to buy a newer one. What number is mine? Add 3 or 4 to that. I'll buy that one. You know? And so I wonder how that would work.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think it's interesting. So first of all, it's all marketing, right? Like they can call it, whether they call it a 16E or they keep the SE name, it's a marketing thing. But like in terms of like the way that they're trying to market it, if they call it the 16E, it really puts it in line with the rest of the iPhone 16 family, which is a little bit weird because it's going to look probably pretty significantly different. It's going to be missing, for example, the camera control. If you say, oh, the new iPhone 16 feature is camera control, and someone gets a 16e and they're like, I have an iPhone 16. Where's my camera control? Like, it's an iPhone 16. It's a brand new phone. It says 16. Like, what's going on here? Well, yeah, but it's the E. It's the cheaper one. So there could be some amount of confusion with things like that. And I also agree with you that it implies that they're going to be updating it more frequently, which is a little weird because it seems like the whole point of the SE is newer hardware in an older form factor, and the form factor isn't really changing that frequently anymore. So there's not really a reason for them to keep doing, you know, to do a new one every year.
And it also, I think the part of the strategy with the iPhone SE has been, at launch, it's the current generation chip, but that phone is going to be in production for years. And if this 16E nomenclature implies that they would update it every year, which means probably a new chip every year. And that's really, if the design isn't changing and the chip isn't changing, that's the whole phone. And so that kind of implies that every year it gets the latest chip, which means that it really is just like, hey, this is the current phone, but without as many features. And I think that's going to really, really confuse the lineup. In fact, I just noticed E Uploads here in the chat saying iPhone Air would also mess up the lineup. Like, imagine a landscape where you can buy an iPhone 17e, 17, 17 Plus, 17 Air, 17 Pro, and 17 Pro Max. Holy hell, that is way too much. That is so over the top. Nobody's going to have any idea what that is. People don't even know the difference between a 14, 15, and 16. If you start adding in E's and Plus and Air and Pro, people are not going to know what's going on.
Yeah, I was also thinking about that there was going to be, there was a rumor about like the Air phone. There were rumors a couple years ago about an Extreme. I don't know if those rumors are dead, but like
Ultra.
Yeah, Ultra, right. There's been lots of different rumors, and I feel like, so there's an interesting comment up from Louis BHA, I'm not sure how to say that, but he was saying that it's kind of like what Google does. So like the Google Pixel, you know, they have the whatever their regular Pixel, say it's the Pixel 9 is the current one. So there's the Pixel 9. I was just looking this up. There's the 9, the 9 Pro. They have a Pro XL, which I think it looks like this is the first Pro XL that they've had. And then there's usually an A. So there's no 9A yet, but probably sometime this year there will be a 9A. And so that's, I guess, kind of like what Apple is doing, where they have... Now, they have four phones in the standard. They have the 16, the 16 Plus, the 16 Pro, and the Pro Max, right? So there's four phones already. I can see what this is. So maybe it does become a yearly thing, like what Google does with the A phones. And I guess if Apple can differentiate the 16e enough from the regular 16 lineup, I think a big thing for the Pixel is the materials that they use. The A phones, the Pixel A phones, I think are like plastic. I mean, they're nice plastic, but they're plastic versus like metal and glass on the more expensive ones. So if Apple's reusing existing like material and stuff, I'm not sure how big of a difference it would make. But like maybe Apple's going for a sort of Pixel A series kind of play here. Maybe they could do that. But I agree that their lineup can get kind of confusing, you know, too many options.
Yeah, there's a lot going on there. I that's a good point though. I'm glad you pointed out that comment, because I do think that does make it a little bit more logical, but I think overall I'm still skeptical about that name, just because Apple has a tendency to let products sit on the shelf for like randomly 3-4 years and not touch them. And if they especially put a number on it, then it makes it all the more noticeable. I mean, like right now the iPhone SE is old as heck. You know, for $429, I don't think it's a good deal anymore. I think it was borderline in 2022. Obviously, for $120, yeah, sure. Now we're on a different playing field.
Yeah.
But the price point, I think, really, setting aside the whole name, I think the price point makes or breaks an iPhone 16e or SE4 or whatever it's going to be called. And to be quite honest, I think the chances of us getting out of here without a price increase are pretty much nil. So the question now is, what do they price this thing at to make it enticing, but not too good that it cannibalizes iPhone 16 sales?
Yeah, that's the question. And then there's also, I'm not an Apple encyclopedia like you are, so I'm checking the Apple website just to see. And they're also selling the iPhone 15 and the iPhone 14 right now, in addition to obviously the 16 and the SE. So for me the question is, what are they gonna do? You know, they have to make the price work with the 16 lineup, and then I wonder if they're still gonna keep the 15 and the 14 around, or if those are going to go away. Maybe at least the 14 is going to go away. Like, how are they going to structure everything? And like, where's the price going to fall? That's our question.
I think bare minimum 14 is gone. There's no way. They should not be selling that at all right now anyway, to be quite honest, because it's really not. I feel like the 14 and the 15 are such a granular difference. I mean, the dynamic island and USB-C is nice. Apart from that, no one's going to notice. They should not be selling the iPhone 14. It's also on Lightning. That's out of here. Zero chance that phone is still on sale by the end of the week. However, it is priced at, I think, $599.
Yeah.
So, $599 is the absolute ceiling for what this iPhone SE will be. Obviously, there's no way it's going to be more than that. Yeah. The question is how much less. Right now we're at $429. We've got Lewis and Chet saying $499 or bust. I tend to be leaning, I think I'm leaning towards $499 as well. I think $429 is really low for the phone that has been described with, you know, 5G and hopefully 48 megapixel camera, OLED, USB-C, current gen chip. I think $499 is a reasonable price. I think if they were to do $549, I'd be a little bit more on the fence, because at that point you start looking at used iPhones or refurbished iPhones from, you know, Amazon or whatever. It's going to be interesting. If they do manage to keep the same price, I'm just going to put this out there. If the iPhone SE is $429 or even $479, which is what they charge for the 128 gigabyte version, that would be genuinely the best value in all of smartphones, in my opinion. To get a brand new iPhone with all those features that it entails and USB-C, for less than $500, that's nuts.
Yeah, that would be. Yeah, I feel like I agree with you that they're gonna raise the price, because if you look at like the current iPhone SE that's $429 and you compare it to what we're expecting to get, I'm sure that they have to. Now I will say, like, you know, the rumors are saying that the new SE or 16E or whatever, the new phone is gonna be supported. It's going to support Apple Intelligence, and so obviously it needs to have a decent amount of memory, which Apple probably wouldn't otherwise give to, you know, this super entry level phone. But their Apple Intelligence is their big thing, even though it like barely exists right now. It's their big thing that they're trying to push, so they want to support it. And I will say, for what it's worth, like recently, you know, Apple updated the MacBook Airs. They just bumped up the storage, the base storage, the base memory, the base RAM in those, and they just did that, and it, you know, they didn't charge anymore. So I could I could see, like I think that could be the reason why it doesn't go all the way up to $599, for example. But, like, because if they're willing to do that for the MacBook Air, they might be willing to do that for here. But I agree that there's got to be some amount of price increase. And I did like John's comment here. We can talk about that.
Yeah, John had a good point here. If they're putting 16 in the name, I think he's right that that does increase the price. As stupid as that sounds. I'm conflicted about $599 because, to your point, this phone is going to get Apple Intelligence. That's like one of the main selling points of it. Now, is Apple Intelligence worth paying for? No, I think it's dumb and bad, at least right now. But isn't it kind of ironic that you can buy an iPhone 16e for $599 and then you'd buy an iPhone 15 for $699 without Apple Intelligence? That's weird. Why? Dude, I don't know. This is why I think that the $500 barrier is a tough one for an iPhone SE to cross. Because when it's under or at $500, I think it kind of, the vibe that it gives off is bargain bin, you know, parts special fire sale, right? It's, hey, we crammed some new bits into some old bits and now it's cheap. Buy it up. And it worked. The iPhone SE, I know a lot of people in the chat are saying that the iPhone SE only really sells in international markets and not in the US. I disagree with that. I think that the iPhone SE is more popular here than you would think. I mean, I know a guy who's had four iPhone SEs. He just back to backs those things. Batteries get low, screen gets cracked, pop up, hit up eBay, buy another one. Boom, easy. Now, I would argue maybe that's not the best idea. I'd maybe buy an expensive, more expensive phone and keep it for longer if that's the problem. But this phone has that potential because it's not a 2017 battery. It's a modern phone. So I am going to be very curious to see between $400 and $600 where it lands, because that really will be, I think, the main story for this device, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, for this category, it really is all about the price. But now I'm wondering, I agree with you that the, you know, the 14 series is going to go away, but if Apple keeps the 15 and the 15 plus at $699, let's say hypothetically they even increase the memory, so it's the same iPhone 15 and 15 plus. Now that would be really confusing to have some iPhone 15s that can do Apple Intelligence and some that can't. But like, let's just say hypothetically, right? Because if there's a cheaper phone that has more memory and does Apple Intelligence, and then there's a more expensive one that doesn't, like whether you care about Apple Intelligence or not, that's just a very confusing phone lineup for Apple to have, and it doesn't look good. Like they wouldn't want, you know, their phone lineup to look like that. So let's just say that they have the same iPhone 15 and 15 Plus starting at $699, just like it is right now, but they increase the memory so that it can support Apple Intelligence. Let's just say they do that. And then you have the iPhone SE or the 16E, whatever you want to call it, and maybe it starts at $599 maximum, right? Mm. What's the difference between, or why would you go and get a 15/15 Plus instead of this, you know, 16E or SE? Because the new phone, the SE, is going to get USB-C. They're not putting lightning in that thing. So that's kind of a difference from the 14 to the 15. So you're getting USB-C anyways. Maybe you don't get the dynamic island, but, like, you know, I don't think that's worth an extra $100. What's the real difference, you know?
I think it'd basically just be dynamic island and ultra wide camera. That's really all that would be noticeably different. But I think this kind of speaks to the problem that Apple is getting into right now, which is that they are introducing more granularity and options on the non-pro side. And by comparison, their pro-level products are quite simple and easy to understand. And I think that that's a bad approach. I mean, the amount of confusion that even you and I are facing here, trying to remember what even features the iPhone 15 has compared to the 14, I think that is proof that they are way overcomplicating things for the market that is the least informed about those things. And geez, that is a really interesting, it's an interesting, and it's an already traveled road to go down, because one of the number one things that Steve Jobs did when he got back in as CEO of Apple in 1997 was cut all of these convoluted pricing and product segmentation. And I mean, you go back and you look at the Macintosh Performa. That was Apple's big late 90s product. And Steve Jobs came back and he said, "What the hell is even this? This is terrible. This makes no sense. You're gone. Power Mac." Wow. Okay. Much easier. The four-part square was his controlling stake. You know, you had laptop, desktop, consumer, pro. Easy. Now, the landscape has changed. You know, we're not talking about laptop, desktop anymore, because there's a lot of other things that have entered the system. But at its core, I think the message of that strategy was make it easy to understand so that you don't have to know what the features are. You know, if you were a college student in 2001, you'd say, "Oh, I'll get an iBook." If you were a video editing college student, you'd say, "I'll get a PowerBook." That's easy. I is fun and quirky and light. Power is professional, expensive, and tough. iPhone 16, 16e, 16 Plus, 16 Pro, and 16 Pro Max doesn't really fit into that. I think that what we're maybe looking at here is a 3x3 or a 3x2 combination, whatever it might be, right? You could say, let's have a phone, we'll have basic, regular, premium. That makes sense to me. But when you toss in all of these, it's not just basic, regular, premium. It's basic, regular, premium, previous, regular, previous, basic. It's too complicated. There's too much going on. I'm scared.
Yeah. I agree. I think it's, you can kind of think of it that there's like maybe basic, regular, premium, and then the other column, the two rows are basically like smaller screen and bigger screen, and then you have the Pro and Pro Max.
Right.
You have the regular and the Plus, and then you have the S model, and well, but then that doesn't really fit. I don't know about the screen sizes, but like kind of. But I agree, it's confusing, especially when you're talking like when they're selling the older iPhones. So they have the 16, but they also have the 14 and the 15 at the same time, and then that's kind of confusing. I think there's an interesting comment. eUploads had a good comment saying it's more realistic to lower the price of the iPhone 15 to $499 and then have the new SE or 16E or whatever start at $599. So if they did something like that, like they mm-hmm. let's say cut the 14, lower the price of the 15, I think the point is that the 16E or the new SE, whatever it's going to be called, can't be less than the 15. I think if it is, then it causes confusion because it's a newer product, even if it might be, you know, older hardware, it's a newer product, and especially the whole Apple Intelligence, like supporting Apple Intelligence thing, like it doesn't make sense to have that, to go from that to an older phone that doesn't support Apple Intelligence and then back up to the new phones. So if they shuffle those things around, or if they did what Lewis was saying, if they discontinue the SE3, obviously, the 14, obviously, and the 15, if they were to discontinue all three of those, which they could do, and then just have the 16E, that could also. So I could see it either way, but I think that the 16E has to be right before the regular 16 in terms of pricing. I think that's the best way that it makes sense.
See, I get what you're saying. I actually think, see, now I don't know, because the problem is the iPhone SE as a category I really like. Even if I had problems with them still using the iPhone 8 design in 2022 and like whatever that situation was, at its core, it was, this is the cheap phone. I think once you get to $599, $699, that is no longer, it loses all of its appeal, and it starts to just seem like, hey, here's an expensive phone without features. How about that? And I don't really, I just don't really see that appealing to that many people, because if they put 16 on it, I think for it to be $600 and for it to have 16 on it, in my opinion, that raises the bar significantly. And at that price point, then I start to go, come on, man. Why don't we have a notch? Why don't we have, you know, an ultra wide camera? What exactly are we doing here? I think having that, it basically having an iPhone 15 design with one camera and the newest chip, that to me is not worth more than $550. At 600 with 128 gigs of storage, I'm like, at that point you might as well just get an iPhone 16.
Yeah, so I'm looking at the Google store just to get a comparison. And so okay. Google has, you know, at least for the Pixel 8 series, they have the Pixel 8, the 8 Pro, and the 8A. So it's like super, super clear. And this is the previous gen, so it's not, you know, the 9 is the latest. There's no 9A yet, but it's the previous gen. But they have three phones, it's pretty clear. The 8 Pro starts at $999, the 8 starts at $699. Which is $100 less than the starting price of the iPhone 16. And then the Pixel 8a starts at $499, but right now it says it starts at $399. So save $100, starts at $399. So I feel like that there's a lot more. First of all, the fact that there's only three phones instead of five, I guess, kind of helps, but there's also a bigger gap between them, that it's like very clear there's the Pro phone, the middle phone, and the entry level, the A phone. So I agree with you that it would be great for Apple if they can keep it under 500. If they can do $499 for this SE, that would be great, because it creates more separation between the phones. It makes it more clear, like, you know, where you're going to end up and you know, why you might want to ladder up to the next one. If they can clean up the existing lineup with the 14 and 15 and figure out what they're going to do with that, if they get rid of the 14 and 15 and they just stick this, you know, the new SE at $499, that would be the cleanest way, I think, and that would be the best way. And then you have a pretty clear separation, right? Because you have $499, right. And then you go up to $799 and then $999. And that's a pretty nice you know, distribution.
Yeah, no, I like that. And the ironic thing, we're getting kind of roasted here in the chat for spending a long time discussing the minute details of something that we will likely not use as a daily driver. And that is true. That is true. However, I do think that as a lineup, I see this mainly as something that will be annoying for us to have to explain to people. Because I don't know about you, but I am often helping people translate and figure out what it is that they want, what it is that they have, and what it is that they need. And when you can just say, just go buy an iPhone SE, that's all you need. It makes things a lot easier than going, well, you know, if you want an ultra wide camera, then you get the iPhone 15, but that doesn't have the dynamic island, and it's not going to have Apple Intelligence. So then you should get the iPhone 16e, which is actually going to be $100 more than the 15, but it's actually a little bit less, and there's only one camera, and it actually doesn't have the dynamic island, it has a notch. So it's kind of forwards and backwards at the same time. Does that make any sense? No, it doesn't make any sense. It's confusing. So whatever they do, it has to make sense, and that's all we want, right? Simple, nothing too scary. Someone, Lewis in the chat posted, where's that comment here? I don't know how to drive this thing and I'm scared. Not everyone knows how to do everything. I think you should leave reference. If you get that, you'll know what I mean. And it's just, that is honestly more true than you could possibly think. However, I do think at this point, we gotta wrap this up with another iPhone rumor that was popping off this week. And it's a rather controversial one. I don't know if you've seen John's new iPhone 17 leak, but this would be the first time since 2019 that we might actually have a change to the camera system. Whoa, visually at least.
Yeah, I did actually watch John's video. I saw the mocks, I saw his video. Very, very interesting, I will have to say. Very interesting.
Yeah. So I would love to know what you think about this design. And it's also really funny how skeptical everybody is covering this. We'll get more into that in a second. But what do you think about the design?
I think, yeah, so we've seen there was this version and then there was one that had that like duotone so that the area below the camera bump was sort of a different color as well. So I've seen both of those. I think regarding the camera bump, so I guess for those who are listening, it basically imagine the current iPhone camera bump, but you take this the square and you stretch it all the way horizontally, and so the flash and the LiDAR and the microphone are all the way on the other side, and it's just a big old camera rectangle, and there's a bunch of empty space in the middle of it, and it doesn't really seem to serve a purpose, but it's looks different because then you can tell it's a new iPhone. And that's what I think about it.
Yeah. You know what? I agree with you. And here's the problem. The three pod camera on the iPhone currently, it's hard to redesign it because it's honestly the optimal arrangement for a triple camera setup for a number of reasons. Number one, grouping them in that pair makes the three lenses as close together as possible, which preserves the perspective when you switch between them. That's a really big important thing that people don't realize. And even something like the Pixel, which has that camera bar, that orientation works in some cases, but not for others. For example, iPhones shoot spatial video. And if you arrange the cameras horizontally when the phone is in portrait mode, spatial video is gone. It just won't work. Because the entire reason that it works is that horizontal difference in perspective between the main and ultra-wide cameras. And then also having the zoom lens on the inside, again, it makes the most sense. Because when you're moving from an ultra-wide to a zoomed-in perspective, you want them to be close together or it's going to look weird and clunky. And I have noticed that on Android phones. So it seems like Apple doesn't want to rearrange the cameras. They'd rather just put the flash and the LiDAR and the microphone on the other side for no obvious reason. I mean, in my mind, there has to be some sort of sensor in that blank space to justify making the cameras look like this. Maybe there's an iPhone, maybe there's a periscope lens on the zoom and it'll be like a 10 or 15x or something and the camera bump has to be thicker. I don't know. There's got to be something over there for them to do this, right?
Yeah, I think basically what you're hitting on the nail on the head, the cameras being close together so you can switch between them. Also remember, like the iPhone 16, they moved the cameras, as you know, you said spatial video, and they literally moved the cameras one under the other one to make spatial video work for the 16 series, because on the 15 it was, you know, they were diagonal from each other and so it wouldn't work as well there. So yeah, Apple, like this layout makes sense. And it's also, as much as it is kind of it's been around since the iPhone 11 Pro, it's been around for a long time, but it is distinctive and kind of iconic. Like, imagine if Apple did this and they put the three things in a row, the three lenses in a row. People would say, "Oh, it's a Pixel. They're copying Google or whatever." Like any camera arrangement, they could say, "Oh, they're copying some other company." But this is like Apple's camera arrangement. It's practical and it's. I don't know what the word is, but it's sort of their mark. It's like, this is what the iPhone looks like. It has the cameras like right. this. So I agree that if they're not gonna move the cameras around, they're not gonna rearrange them, but they could make the bar the camera bump wider. And like, I don't know. It is a change that they could make. And I guess if it makes it so that when the thing is on the table, that it doesn't, you know, your phone is like sitting flat on a table and it doesn't like wiggle around at all. Maybe that's a positive. I still don't know if this would help because the cameras come far above the camera bump. So making the bump wider, I don't think is going to do that much, but maybe it would do a little bit to help. But like, yeah, I can't imagine what the reason would be, because unless they're hiding some other sensor under there, like you said, I can't imagine what the reason would be aside from let's make it look different for the sake of looking different.
Yeah. And look, to be honest, part of a phone is going to be that, you know, they rounded the corners to make the corners more round. You know, it doesn't necessarily need to have a function. I think with regard to the camera, I would kind of hope that there would be a reason for doing it other than just like, hey, it's different. But look, we've also criticized them for not making the phone look different in the past. And now they do it and we're giving them shit for it. So who's to say? Maybe we're just being curmudgeonly. But at the same time, a lot of people have been skeptical about this design. Now, I've been talking with John and he's shown me some supporting evidence, I suppose you could call it. And I mean, look, I have never been one to argue that John's leaks were inaccurate. Even back when, you know, obviously there was the big miss that John and Mark Gurman had with that Apple Watch redesign that never ended up being a thing. And I think that a lot of people tend to look at a leak that doesn't end up happening and say, oh, it was fake or it was wrong or it was a plant by Apple to catch people and fire them for leaking stuff. You know, whatever your explanation that people tend to go to is. And I do not doubt for a moment the legitimacy of the information that these leaks are based off of. I have myself dabbled into a little bit of leaking a little while ago. I leaked the Mac Studio design and as well as the secret color for the springtime iPhone 13 and the colors for the new iPad Air at the time. And look, I had the most damning proof that you could possibly have. It literally could not get any more concrete than what I saw. And I was still doubting it. So do I think that John was sent a blurry photo and just said, I'm making a whole video. Yay. No, absolutely not. I think it's a 100% legitimate leak. But Apple designs things that don't get made. The Apple Watch redesign from a couple of years ago was absolutely a real thing that was prototyped. And it looked like that, and it was real, 100%. I just think it was extremely early, and it wasn't final. Leaks come out before the products come out. Things can change. It's February. I'm just going to say, I think at the very bare minimum, Apple is seemingly at a pretty advanced stage of testing this new design. If it comes out and it looks like this, people will say John is right. If it comes out and it doesn't, people will say John is wrong. I think either way, I trust John. I trust his info. Whether the phone will actually look like that is not an indictment of whether the leak is real or not, because I believe that it is.
Yeah, it's a good point. We've probably talked about it before. I definitely agree. Like Apple, obviously they're testing a lot of stuff. If you think that someone sits down and they say, this is what the next iPhone is going to be, and that's exactly what it is, that's not true. They're trying different things. They're building different prototypes. Some prototypes make it farther than others. And so, yes, I agree. I'm sure that there is an iPhone that has in the world, it exists. It's on the world. There's
iPhones on the world.
Yeah. And it has a camera bump that goes all the way across. I definitely believe that. But I wonder, I'm just trying, so going back to your point from before. So you said we criticize Apple when they don't make changes, and now we're kind of criticizing them when they do. And you know what? That's a fair point. I will agree with that. Sometimes it is nice to change the look just for the sake of doing it. I guess part of it is the fact that we're so used to seeing this camera bump, because we've seen this camera bump since the iPhone 11 Pro, and it's been on a lot of phones, and it's gotten bigger, but otherwise it's basically stayed the same. So we're very used to seeing this camera bump. So seeing something that looks similar but is a little bit different is kind of off-putting. And so, you know, initially you're like, oh, I'm not sure if I like this or not. So you have to kind of think about it. I think it looks a little bit weird to take... I like this design because everything is very compact. And when you kind of take the flash and the LiDAR and the microphone and move them all the way to the other side, and then there's just this big empty space in the middle, I think it looks a little bit weird. But one, maybe it'll grow on us. You know, it's a new thing. It'll take some time. But I also wonder if there's even one little practical reason. If they're like, oh, the microphone is like too close to the camera and it creates some like interference, and oh, if we move the microphone away, or like, oh, the flash is too close, if the flash is a little bit further away from the camera, then I don't know, it improves the picture somehow, there's less glare on the camera, like whatever. If there's some little, like, not that there has to be, but if there's some little justification for why they're doing this in addition to looking different, I think that would also kind of help sell it a little bit better. But even if there isn't, sometimes it's good to change up the look just for the sake of it. So I'll give you that.
I just hope it's not the only thing that they change. I mean, look, I will admit it. I like it. We had some people in the chat here. I am curious, if you're in the chat right now, do you like this new design or do you think it's dumb and pointless? I don't know. I personally think it looks good. I think your point about the camera bump is true. Because when you put your iPhone down, it's this lower section of the wide-angle lens that's actually resting on the table. The only thing, it would help a little bit though, because when the phone is resting and it rocks, it's the opposite side, there's a bigger difference. So like it would go from rocking quite a bit to rocking a little bit less.
Yeah.
Oh boy. So how great is that? Personally, I want them to completely get rid of the whole rocking thing, because that's so, like, I don't know, it's a small detail, but Steve Jobs would never have sold a product like that. Now, would his solution to it have been to do the impossible and make the product the same but not have that issue? No. He would have just compromised it, because that's what Steve Jobs did. You know, I feel like, sorry to go on this off-topic tangent here, but a lot of people tend to think when Apple releases something right now that's not perfect, like, for example, the Dynamic Island or the notch or the camera bump that makes the phone rock, people would say, oh, Steve Jobs, he would never have allowed this. Yeah, you're probably right, but that's because he would have just insisted on selling iPhones with terrible cameras. He just would have been like, well, when the cameras can fit in the phone, we'll put them in and make them better. That would have been his approach. It basically was. He sold the original MacBook Air with an iPod hard drive. He didn't say, oh, well, we can magically fix it. No, he said, let's put the worst hard drive known to man in a $3,000 computer and make it run Mac OS, and it didn't. So, like, that's, this is the thing that people always get wrong about Steve Jobs. They're always like, oh my God, he could work miracles. No, he knew how to strategically compromise and build excitement for a product that in some ways was lacking. That's straight up. And that's still impressive and really, really cool. And, you know, it's got its pros and cons, but just putting that one out there.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, I'd rather have better cameras and the phone rocks a little bit than have worse cameras. So I'll agree with you there. And I also agree.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I do think that if they extend this thing out. Now, I almost wonder if they would also at the same time make it thicker so that the, it doesn't seem like it is thicker in the mocks, in the leaks. So maybe the camera still sticks out a little bit, but I think having the full width would help. I'm looking at it. I have a picture. I have the leak, the mock-up, the render here, and I've been staring at it for the past like minute or two, and I'm just trying to like think about it. I do kind of like it. I feel like the black on the color, you know, whatever color your iPhone is, and it's just black. I don't know. If you have a phone that's this light, I guess in the picture it's like a purple phone, but like if you have a light phone, a white phone, or whatever this color is, I don't know. I kind of like, we could talk about the duotone rumor. There's the rumor that there would kind of be a two-tone color on the back, and I wonder if they could incorporate that into the camera bump, or what are they calling it now? A camera
continent. Bar.
Camera continent, yeah.
They can, that's what I'm going with.
I think that's, we got the dynamic island and the camera continent, you know? It makes sense.
I think it makes a lot of sense. I'm not going to lie. I like that. I'm running with that. That's going to be my new term.
That's good.
I will camera say, continent. I think, so I like your two-tone point, I think, is a good one. So first of all, from what I've seen, let me pull up the renders again so I can look at it more closely. I am skeptical about the, in John's renders, he has what looks like kind of a gasket around the camera continent, and it's obviously got the frosted color of the back glass, and then in the continent, that camera bar is black. Now, from what I've seen, which are of course only, you know, mock-ups, I don't know that there is that that gap there. So I think it's possible that it could function the way that the current one does, where that bit's glossy and the rest is frosted. Or, per your two-tone theory, I certainly don't think that it would be a black camera continent on a white iPhone, for example. I think it would probably be, I mean, in the way that he rendered it, that John rendered it here, with like a space gray type, black type thing, where it's like the back of the phone is one color, the camera continent is a little darker. I could see that maybe being the case. So like a desert titanium iPhone would have just like a darker complementary color. You know, Apple's good at color theory. I'm sure they'll make that work. But I don't know, dude. It's very early. We'll see. I'm skeptical. Those are kind of my, it's early, we'll see, I'm skeptical. Not of the rumor's veracity, but of like how this would work and why they would do it.
Yeah, I mean, we're what, 7 months out from these things being announced. Like, it's true. we're more than half a year, right? We're less than half a year into the current cycle, the iPhone 16. As boring as they were, and there's not much to talk about. Like, we're still less than halfway through that. So I agree that, you know, we'll see how things change. There will be lots of rumors over the coming months. We'll kind of see. I'm sure we'll see more of this design, or if we see it go away and we'll say, oh, that was something they were testing and now they're kind of going in a different direction. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think that if they get the colors right, because I'm looking at this like dark purple iPhone with a black camera bar. And I don't like that one as much, but the space gray or space black or whatever it is with the like space gray with a black camera bar, I like that. So if they get the colors right, I could see this being, you know, switch, change it up a little bit. We've had the same design since the 11 Pro for the cameras. Change it up a little bit. Could be kind of fun. So we'll see how this rumor plays out, but at least it's interesting. It's like, it's interesting to look at and talk about, and I'm excited to see what happens to it.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm just happy that we're talking about a design change. I feel like we haven't had that in, well, realistically, we've not really had a major design change since 2020. So, yeah, let's just say I'm happy that there is stuff to talk about, and it's not just, hey, the battery's going to be 4% larger this year, and they might be slightly more or less rounded corner. Yeah, okay, buddy. Let's talk camera content. This is better.
Yeah, definitely.
And just before we go here, I did want to address, yes. So, comment here. When do we get a tour of the house and studio? Dude, it's bothering me. I've been in limbo here. I have a bunch of stuff that's ready to like start making new content, but I've been doing a little bit of a moving type video that I've been working on since December now. I've had quite a few videos now in this new location, but my set is still not fully built, and I still haven't been able to release that video because, let's just say, I ordered some custom fabricated panels of some kind, of some variety, and they were significantly damaged in shipping, and it's been a massive headache to get them replaced. And I'm really afraid that when they do, they're also going to be damaged, and then I'm going to want to blow my brains out, and I'm never going to finish this dang studio. So hopefully I will be able to reveal all very soon, because I honestly have gotten to the point where I forget that you guys haven't even seen this new place outside of, like, it's been on my videos, but you have no idea, like, what's going on behind the scenes. So hopefully it won't be much longer on that front. And similarly, more middle lane content, please. I have 3 major videos planned for that. Well, with our last remaining minute here, I guess I'll explain what the goal is with that channel. Okay, so when I started the middle lane, I started it because I was like, I've always wanted to do car content. I've always wanted to do, you know, Top Gear style challenges and road trips and traveling and just really having fun with that channel. And so I've done a mixture of fun big projects and more typical car reviews. And ironically, the car reviews have done very well. They were my most viewed videos. They've done way better than I would have thought. But as a sustainable business model of something that I want to do more often, I need to refine my focus both on the tech channel and on the car channel so that things make sense and I'm able to do what I want to do with that channel. And my most recent video on that channel was uploaded almost 100 days ago. It was a review of my Lucid Air. It has done pretty well, but it's not, I don't want to be making car reviews on that channel. That's not what I want to make. And so my new approach is I am only going to post videos that are the exact videos that I want to make. So will it ever be a weekly channel? No. Will it even be a monthly channel? Well, that remains to be seen. Hopefully one day, but not for the foreseeable future. But the plan is to work with my, well, if you've seen my road trip video from last year, Andrew, who we drove across Europe in Mercedes together, and we basically want to make that into, that's the direction of the channel. We're going to do, also I'm reading the comments here, and there's some very funny stuff going on down there with Noah's car situation, which we can get in. We got to talk about that once the news calms down. We'll talk about that. But TLDR on the car channel, I've been rambling here. The goal is I want to make the absolute best car videos that I can make. It's probably going to be every other month at best, but I want it to be such that every single one of those videos is of an incredibly high standard of quality and entertainment factor. And they're going to be, it's going to be more similar to the road trip that I posted about last, I think it was like September or something that I posted that. But that is the direction that I want that channel to go. And I'm going to figure out a way to make it happen. So go subscribe to The Middle Lane. Let me, I'll pull it up on here. We have new branding that Andrew worked on.
Ooh.
It's, and let me tell you, it looks nice. Let me share my screen here in these final few moments. If you're listening to this via audio, then sorry.
Whoa. I love that. But yeah, that.
Andrew gave us a real update. Isn't it sick?
It's like retro, but also kind of modern. I like that.
Yeah, dude. It is so good. And so, yeah, in terms of like video ideas, you can see this channel's kind of all over the place. My most viewed video was like the fourth one that I ever made. Why is this 2009 Porsche twice the price of 2008? 250K views. Clearly that worked. But as I tried to do other types of, like some of those would only get, you know, 10,000 views. Some of them will get, you know, 70, 86. The Lucid Air video got 273,000 views. And then my follow-up got 27. You know, it's kind of all over the place. And that's fine. It's a new channel. It's honestly overall doing way better than I would have thought. But where I think the business model of a channel like that makes the most sense is releasing a select number of videos that will be bangers and building up that catalog. And as this person said, Grand Tour and Top Gear UK road trips kind of type of stuff. And yeah, because I think that is the gap in car content that exists right now. It is sort of informative, kind of, but fun first, larger scale projects like that. And there's channels out there that are doing it. There's channels out there that are doing reviews. There's channels out there that are doing rebuilding cars. Like, there's a lot of content out there. But I think this should be a niche that is currently not tapped, and that's where I want to go.
Yeah, I think, you know, whenever occasionally we'll do something on your main channel, and it's always a lot of fun, like the 100 iPhones project. We have another project that we've been working on for a while. Won't say anything about that.
You're not going to see for a while.
And it's gonna, yeah, it's been happening. It's been work in progress for a while, and it's still got a while to go. But when we work to, yeah, we you know, we have some fun, and yeah, having a channel like cars are such a, it's like a great way to have fun because you can go explore and like see different places, drive different cars, like, you know, race and like all these different things, and it's a lot of not just, you know, on a track, but like, you know, you take different paths and like and explore and stuff. So I think there's a lot of potential for fun, and I hope maybe I can make an appearance on there sometime. I think that'd be a lot of fun. Yeah,
absolutely. The top priority on that channel is fun. Yeah. And hopefully it'll go somewhere. Look, that's the weird thing is, I think if you start a YouTube channel and you have a goal of I want to make these exact videos and I want to make money and I want this to be my job, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't work like that. It doesn't. Because you can tell when someone is making a video because they think it will get views and not I'm making the video that I want to make. And the thing is, I have a tech channel right now that is my full-time job. So that obviously needs to be my priority. And at the same time, that allows me to make content on that channel at a tremendous loss, I might add. I have not even remotely turned a profit on anything that I've done on that channel. But it's not for money. It's for, this is the content that I want to make. and I'm just gonna make it until hopefully it pays me. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, and yeah, it's great. Like you can do the tech channel and it'll support you, and then, you know, the car channel, hopefully that can start to help, and you can do even bigger things. And yeah, it'll be exciting. It'll be exciting to see how
hopefully
it goes.
Hopefully so. Yeah. You know what's not exciting though?
Being 15 minutes over on this episode. It's a little bit exciting, but
I think that's a little exciting. That's the least we can do given our previous history that we're not going to talk about ever again. But I will say this. It has been a pleasure seeing you guys. We'll be back next week, right?
Yeah, I should be here.
Uh-oh.
No.
Wait.
No.
Wait. Oh. No, yes. 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 Next week.
Yes.
Next week.
Next week.
Yes.
Okay.
Good. Well, on that slight fear, on that little jump scare at the end, I've been your host, Luke Miani.
And I've been your host, Noah Rubin. We will see you next week, and have a great night.
Take care.